The regular season is officially in the book, and the A10 tournament is right around the corner, and we could not be more excited. Welcome back to a special edition of the A10 Talk podcast. My name is Daniel Frank. I am joined by the one and only KG Kaylee Godek, along with Jacob Munch, Zach Austin, and Zach Weiss. How is everyone doing?
Could
Doing
be
great.
better. It's March. It's time for madness. It's what every college basketball fan is looking for right now. So you know that there's going to be some great games coming up on this episode, especially as it's a women's only episode.
Indeed it is, and this is indeed March. So as Kaylee alluded to, we are once again going to be doing something a little bit different this week. Folks may remember we did this style of podcast at the beginning of conference play, and we're rolling with it again since folks seem to like what we were doing with it the first time. So this is going to be a women's basketball only podcast tonight. We are going to get rolling with Zach Weiss's awards. If you have been following A10 Talk for a number of years now, you know that Zach Weiss leads a media awards that is not the official A10 awards for postseason, but it is rather the A10 media following awards. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Zach as we are going to do a live reveal of this year's award winners right here on the A10 Talk podcast. Zach Weiss, take it away.
Thank you for such a nice introduction, Daniel. And yes, for those who've been following, this has been done for the last several of years. This year, it's been a nice, healthy contingent. And for the first time ever, we have no awards that were unanimously voted on with first place votes. And we have one award that was really, really funky, and I'll explain as we go down. But for those that are not familiar, we vote. This is, again, not the actual release, but this is a vote for the exact awards that the coaches are scheduled to vote on while they're completely overwhelmed by preparing for what they hope to be a Cinderella run into the NCAA tournament. So us who have no life figure that we would throw our hats into the proverbial ring here and see what we can do. And without further ado, here we go. The first award goes to the Coach of the Year. And it's ironic because all of the coaches that were voted on last year did not receive any votes this year. And last year's award was given to Rebecca Tillett. And this year, receiving 5 of 6 first place votes, the winner is Vanessa Blair Lewis from George Mason University. Vanessa and the Patriots are 23-6 this year and 14-4 in A10 versus a 16-15 mark with an 8-8 A10 mark this last year. And the other vote went to Beth O'Boyle, whose Patriots have rebounded from a 7-22, 4-12 slate and transformed that into a 26-4 and 15-3. She's done this before. She's done it again. And again, it really speaks to the parity of how many great coaches there are in this conference just for everything to come together in this way. So a hearty congratulations to both of them and a lot of these coaches who were extremely deserving. It wasn't exactly a slam dunk like it was in some years past. Here comes the slightly interesting one. The all defensive team, and this is going to go in reverse order. The first selection, which is the fifth spot on the all defensive team, goes to Rhode Island's Tennen Magasa from Rhode Island again, 56 blocks. Julia Martinez placed fourth from St. Louis. Laura Ziegler placed third from St. Joseph's. Addie Budnick placed second from Rhode Island, and Megan McConnell placed first for Duquesne. And it's the first time as someone that covers Duquesne that someone from Duquesne has actually won one of the awards. And it's also interesting because she did not receive any first place votes. So someone who did not receive any first place votes won just out of the combination of the stack of votes. So congratulations to Megan McConnell, who at 5'7" had 203 defensive rebounds and recorded 56 steals. So congratulations to Meg on that honor. Scrolling down the list to the all freshman team. The freshman pod, it was a little bit tougher to in from depth to vote, but those selections went to Eve Fiala from Dayton, Lily Talalay from UMass, Nicole Melius from LaSalle, Kennedy Harris from George Mason, who received a first place vote, and 5 first place votes. The overwhelming freshman of the year goes to George Mason's Zaza Walton. Anybody that has watched the Patriots play this year, that is not too surprising. And in a similar vein, well wishes to Kennedy Harris for those who saw the regular season finale as well. Our thoughts and prayers are with her and with the Mason team as they proceed into this third season. For the sixth Women of the Year, The runners up, each receiving a vote, were Maddie Plank from Davidson and Zaza Walton from George Mason. But the overwhelming choice with the first place votes was Rachel Ullstrom from Richmond. Just George Mason had a lot of people that were up for consideration. There are really three people that could have been considered, but it really speaks to their depth, but it also more so speaks to how special Richmond's year has been, earning a top seed. Rachel amassing 11.9 points per game off of 65 three-pointers, shooting 52-6 from the floor, 46-3 from three, 43-3 from three, and 82% from the free throw line. So a congratulations to her. The Most Improved Player Award, there were two runners up, Loyola's Sam Galanopoulos and VCU's Tamaya Lewis Utsi, both receiving a vote, but the winner was Kristen Williams from UMass, who has 11.9 points per game this year, shoots at 83.9% from the line, and has made 59 threes, a massive up from 1.2 points per game, six threes, and 50% on the charity stripe on four different attempts. So again, an increased role for Kristen Williams this year and making the most of it. So a hearty congratulations to her. And now, without further ado, the all conference teams as voted on by the A10 Talk media. This was very, very close in some respects. The closest honorable mention was Steph Kulesza from UMass, who missed making a team by a single point. So this was extremely close. But the third team is comprised of Sophie Phillips from Rhode Island, Kennedy Harris from George Mason, Sam Galanopoulos from Loyola Chicago, Zaza Walton from George Mason, Tamaya Lewis Udsey from VCU, and Mackenzie Smith from St. Joseph's. That is your third team. The second team selections went to Peyton Kennedy from St. Louis, Addie Budnick from Richmond, Maya Torre from Rhode Island, Grace Townsend from Richmond, Taylor Donaldson from Fordham, and Kyla McMakin from St. Louis. And your all-conference first team, again from descending to the player of the year, Richmond's Maggie Dugan, George Mason's Sonia Smith, VCU's Sarah Tibiasu, St. Joseph's Talia Brugler, Duquesne's Megan McConnell, and the player of the year in the Atlantic 10 as voted on by us was Laura Ziegler from St. Joseph's. And that one broke out really interestingly because Talia Brugler actually received the most first place votes from everybody in the race, but received 91 points. Sarah Tibiasu also received a first place vote. Megan McConnell did not, but finished with 93 points above Brugler, and Ziegler, for transparency, received one first place vote for 95 points total. So these were really, really competitive races. Also receiving votes, just for those curious, were SLU's Julia Martinez, Rachel Ullstrom from Richmond, Rosie Deegan from Davidson, Millie Pryor from Davidson, Keisha Hyman from Rhode Island, Ariana Smith from Dayton, Nia Robertson from George Washington, Kristen Williams from UMass, Alyssa Fisher from Loyola Chicago, Charlize Dunn from Davidson, Mariana Sari from VCU, and Dayton's Ivy Wolf. Those were all of the people that received votes, but this was probably one of the hardest ones of all of the years to really vote on. I feel like that was a collective feeling across the board in some categories more than others, but a hearty congratulations to everybody that won and everybody that really made this really difficult in a year where it was a very top-heavy Atlantic 10 conference. It was really, really tough. I know some of us took an extensive time just out of respect to the process of this bracket. So a hearty congratulations to all of the winners. And Daniel and KG, back to y'all.
Thank you very much, Zach. It's interesting the way that we all voted this year, and just the ways that it was close in so many races, and the who got first place votes, who didn't, and the way the math kind of worked out. If you look historically too, I've always found it interesting to compare how we've all voted over the years versus how the coaches have voted. And we've usually been pretty darn close to how we vote, how the coaches vote. Usually, the only outlier, if you look at the last several years, has been Coach of the Year. We tend to I think reward coaches that have brought up programs from that historically were lower programs to have more success. So I'm curious if Vanessa is indeed going to win this award for George Mason, because there's certainly a case for her. But I know we also had at least for me personally, I know that Allison Guth deserves a mention for Coach of the Year potentially, as well as obviously Andrew Zell from Richmond. And there's cases to be made for so many folks. This league from a coaches and player standpoint has so much talent. As we transition to our next segment here, I think we're all going to see highlighted kind of how each of these different teams have so much talent and what makes them all so special. So, unlike the first time around that we did this, where we highlighted all 15 teams, we kind of want to contend this a little bit. Since we all kind of voted as a group, who do we think realistically has a shot to win the A10 tournament this year? So we narrowed it down to the top six teams in the field. Starting with, we're going to go descending order here. So we're going to start with the six seed Rhode Island, who Zach Austin's going to take us in about. And then we'll move on down to Duquesne, Mason, St. Joe's, VCU, and then finishing with Richmond. But first, we'll start with Zach Austin and his Rhode Island Rams. Zach, take it away.
Thanks, Daniel. It's great to be back on the podcast. And Rhode Island's had a very interesting season. Since the last time we talked, there hasn't been this massive winning streak that URI has been accustomed to the last few years. And there's certainly been a lot of ups and downs. And I think especially so since the halfway point in the year, since conference play started. Of course, you look at Davidson and some other teams in the conference, and you can't exactly say Rhode Island's been completely unlucky compared to other teams, but the ways they've been hit this year terms of circumstances have been kind of wild. In terms of injuries and absences, I think to Anel Dutat missing time with a compliance issue. And keep in mind, for those who don't regularly cover Rhode Island, AD is a high GPA student. She's an engineering student. She's on the dean's list. For that to happen kind of out of nowhere, everyone was caught off guard by it. She missed four games, so not a ton, thankfully, but that's a huge blow to your momentum, right? Inez DeBras is another example. She makes her first career start after Tisha Hyman goes down. That's another injury. She leaves the first game. She starts in within a minute with an injury and has to miss another. So things like that throughout the year certainly hindered URI. But I think at the same time, you look to last year and then this season, I think the overall chemistry took longer to get together, and they're still maybe working some things out even at this point in the year. But I think the consistency is a lot lower. And I think in part that's due to the team makeup as well. And one thing that Tammy Reese kind of focused on the offseason was bringing in athleticism. But when you watch Tisha Hyman play and you watch Dede Davis play, that is something that jumps right off the board, is how athletic they are and how the kinds of moves they can make to create offense. But at the same time, you kind of lower the quality of the shooters. So in a lot of games, especially against the likes of St. Joe's and VCU and teams like that, Sophie Phillips has been very, very face guarded. And I'm very glad personally she made one of our conference teams, but at the same time I was kind of surprised by it because while she has more overall three-pointers, I feel like her overall offense has been down this year. Even over the last few games of the season she was held scoreless against VCU. It's been a struggle at times, but so there's not as many weapons on offense, so to speak. And I think again, when you consider that and you consider that the team took a lot longer to gel, it's been a little bit of a slower year for Rhode Island, but I think the overall talent they have puts them where they are now. They're still a top six seed in the conference, and we've seen the way they can play. They nearly took down NC State on the road. They were up for most of the game. They did take down Princeton, who are ranked 25th. If they can put things together in March, they're going to be a dangerous team. And obviously, beating Dayton up on the road this year hasn't been a huge challenge for a lot of teams. But the way they played in that game, that was one of the most complete performances of the season. So if they can channel that into a matchup like, St. Joe's, for example, maybe VCU, those are the type of teams they might see on the bracket if they advance. If they can put that together and actually string it together, their longest win streak of the year was five. The longest conference win streak of the year is three. They're going to need to win four in a row. So it's going to take a big push, but I do think this team is capable of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think Rhode Island is one of those teams that has been so close for much of the season, but just has never been able to kind of put all the pieces together. So I think we're all kind of keep an eye on Rhode Island as potentially putting St. Joe's on upset alert if Rhode Island should advance into the quarterfinals. I think another name that a lot of folks have been putting on upset alert potentially should they advance into the quarterfinals is Duquesne could be putting George Mason on upset alert. Zach Weiss, I'm going to turn this over to you to kind of talk. Tell me a little bit about your Duquesne Dukes. I know you guys were really, really close to getting a double bye, and the math just didn't work in their favor on the last day of the season.
Five and six, and a lot of questions. That was the state, that was the temperature of this Duquesne women's basketball team as non-conference play ended. The saving grace for this team was an ability to hit a reset button over two separate elongated breaks, the ability to slow down the offense to five on none, the ability to be chameleons defensively and throw defenses at opponents in which they're unexpected. There was a fear from some players that the coaching staff was going to be very upset with them. After all, the expectations for a team that returns 97 or 98% of all relevant statistics is a very, very high one. And I think that losing to a program that had one non-conference win really, I think, had players pushing an "Are we afraid? Are we hitting a panic button?" And they had to make choices. And the biggest game of the year, albeit the team hasn't necessarily performed as it would expect, was the Dayton game. Just seeing that work slow down and do what it did, with the George Mason game being kind of an outlier where they kind of went into a little bit of desperation mode, this Duquesne team has been right there. And with its losses, it's been to teams that are 50-50 games. They have won all of the games they were supposed to win, rather, and it was a lot of the same way. They were able to grind out defensive wins to where opponents were frustrated, annoyed with them, and offensively they found their sets. While the third elongated break was not in their favor, it was against the competition that were the two most consistent teams in the conference the entire season. And it was a place where Duquesne offensively felt like it was good and defensively just didn't guard the 3-point line and couldn't get enough stops. And quite frankly, it could be a blessing in disguise for Duquesne. Of course, Duquesne's led by Megan McConnell. We already outlined what she's been able to do. Nay Bernard has kind of been a force from the 3-point line, and her defense has improved where she's able to go low, and it frustrates a lot of opponents. Amaya Hamilton and Ayana Townsend have really done a good job of, especially coming into A-10 play, being more aggressive. And it's almost like a patient running back when they get the ball, seeing what's presented in front of them and then taking what's given. Tess Myers has the ability to strike from 3-point range, and her defense has been able to keep her on the court. Journey Kiyoko has been a very welcome addition, a freshman of the year in her previous conference, and has an ability to turn on the jets to where when she's on, she could be the fastest player in the conference. And Lauren Wasselson coming back from the brink of a very, very scary situation where it was very, very touch and go. Just her ability to find success on the court has been remarkable to see. This Duquesne team, even though they've lost two games in the last couple here, within the last week, is still a very, very dangerous team. However, the biggest game will be this UMass or this LaSalle winner, because LaSalle is a team that loves to slow the ball down within the first 15 seconds of the clock and then grind it at you. And UMass has always given them fits in recent years just with how they play. So there's a lot to be said about, while I think a lot of people are looking towards that George Mason match and the opportunity for Duquesne to potentially exact revenge, that first game is not a walk in the park for them either. You'd almost rather face that Dayton Bonaventure game because they just match up a lot more favorably for the Dukes. But this is a team that's going to come in very, very determined, that's going to come in very, very ticked off, and has the ability to put the ball in the basket and get a stop. And that's what makes them dangerous, their ability to be chameleons and their ability to just be relentless in their approach.
Yeah, absolutely, Zach. Thank you for your segment there. It's interesting. I've thought a lot about Duquesne in the last several days since the bracket, kind of finalized itself. As that is, at least from my perspective, who George Mason is most likely to face in that quarterfinal. And it's funny, of all the potential teams that they could have faced, Duquesne was the one I really was kind of didn't really want Mason to end up having to face again. Not that I think they can't beat them, because obviously George Mason beat them by 30 the first time around. But there's always that feeling when you get to this time of year that, like, when you've really beaten a team that badly the first time around, you know that they're going to have a target on your back, and they've just been waiting for this type of opportunity. So should we get that matchup on Friday afternoon in Henrico? I think it's certainly to say that it is going to be an excellent matchup, which kind of gives me a really nice segue here in talking about the George Mason Patriots that I cover, who are arguably in the midst of their best season in program history. They are just 2 wins away from setting the record for most wins in a season. They're 1 away from tying that mark. They're 23-6, as Zach mentioned, 14-4. They have already clinched the fewest losses in a single season in program history. They've already clinched their best conference record in program history, both in wins and fewest losses. This is just their sixth 20-win season in program history as well. So we're talking about a team in its 50th season of basketball having 20 wins for just the sixth time. And we can go on and on. They had the big win streak in the middle of the season. All these tangibles and intangibles about all the different records that Mason has broken and set and rebroken throughout this season. But really, I kind of want to focus in on the players that make this team so special. First and foremost, we got to start with Stonya Smith, who I think is a consensus first team All A-10 player, averaging 14.9 points a game for the Patriots. She really is the engine that makes this team go. We saw George Mason because of their depth. They are fourth in the nation in bench scoring. So this is a team that does have the ability to take a lick, lose a player, and keep going. They lost Sonya for a couple games in the middle of the season after she sustained a concussion at Dayton, where she got a nasty whack to the head from her own teammate. Just one of those things. Mason had to go a couple games without Paula Suarez and Zaza Wallen at one point in the season. Keddie Harris was injured in the VCU game the first time around. And then obviously again the second time around, and we certainly are wishing the very best for Kennedy Harris. But George Mason is a team that I think it would be easy to count on right now just because of, they lost one of their best players, but they have the type of depth that could potentially allow them to withstand such an injury. I've mentioned Sonya Smith already. Zaza Walton is a redshirt freshman, didn't play at all last year, obviously, and she is setting this league on fire. Carolyn McCombs described her after the game at GW as, "We got to go out and find a Zaza Walton after Zaza torched them for, I think, 15 points in the second half that day." This is a player that you just would love to have. You look at her at first glance, and she's not the biggest, most imposing player, but boy, does she know how to play the post position well, as well as have a nice outside shot. She drives the ball very fearlessly. And gives Mason kind of an extra gear that they've not always had in the past. You can't talk about this Mason team without mentioning both Jasmine Doster and Taylor Jamison as well as fourth and fifth year seniors at Mason. Taylor described it in the honor senior night as saying, she's been here at Mason since they were so bad they couldn't beat themselves. We're talking about a team that 3, 4 years ago didn't win a single conference game, and now to be in fourth place for just the second time since joining the A-10 in 2014 is a tremendous accomplishment for this team. And I think it's generally agreed upon that should George Mason fall short in the A-10 tournament, they are virtually a lock for the WBIT, which, reminder for folks again, is the new NCAA-sponsored tournament this year. It is essentially taking the place of what the WNIT was a year ago or in recent years, a 32-team format, I believe, automatic qualifier of the regular season champion should they not win the tournament. So Richmond would get an automatic berth to the WBIT should they not win the tournament this year. Obviously, we'll get to Richmond here in a little bit. But Mason's season definitely looks to continue one way or another after the A-10 tournament, which is not something that we've been able to say, at least aside from 2018, basically ever. So the fact that there is more Mason basketball on the horizon, regardless of how this week goes down, is something very exciting. But I don't want to spend too much time on Mason because I certainly have spent a fair amount of time talking about them over the course of this season. So we're going to move on to the third seed, St. Joseph's Hawks. Jacob, tell us about why this Hawk just won't die.
The Hawk has a chance to live the longest in a season than they've had in a really long time. You were talking about George Mason and their potential to play in the postseason after the A-10 tournament. St. Joe's has the same thing. And it was a great season for them. And it had a bit of an odd ending in terms of it felt like they were a lock for a top four for a while. They were right up there at the top of our power rankings for A-10 talk. They were right there contending for the regular season championship. And then they just hit a little bumps in the road at the very end, which numbers pending, they went into the last day with a chance to fall out of the double bye. Now, unlike Duquesne, the Joes got fortunate in their numbers, in part because they beat Duquesne in the final day of the regular season. So the Hawks finished third. But in terms of what's to come, it all starts with their forwards. You've got Laura Ziegler. Great case for A-10 Player of the Year. As Zach mentioned earlier, in our awards, she did win that award. And then you've got Talia Brugler, who, again, she put up all conference numbers for the third year in a row. And those two form one of the best forward tandems in the conference. We'll talk about another one in a moment that could give them issues in the A-10 tournament. I'm looking at you, Zach, and Rhode Island. But before we get there, for St. Joe's, those two, what they can do down low, it's not just within 8 feet of the basket. They can extend. Ziegler, anytime she catches the ball at the elbow, bam, she'll pop that shot and make it. There's no hesitancy there. It's not solely a must be in layup range. They're great at those too, but they can extend a little bit. And what's been very helpful for St. Joe's this year has been the fact that they replaced Katie Jacott, who graduated and was their point guard for 5, 6 years. They replaced her with another veteran guard in Chloe Welch, the transfer from Davidson as a grad student. And Welch, her numbers don't jump off the page crazy, but it kept the team steady. And there wasn't a huge drop with the change from Jacott to whichever guard was next, which turned out to be Welch. That's been huge. I think Julia Nystrom, she has stepped up her play as well. She started a bit of freshman year, then sophomore year last year, came off the bench more. And this year, no matter the role, I feel like her play has really elevated as well. And I've talked about all this without mentioning Mackenzie Smith, who we talked about Ziegler and Brugler down low. Well, Smith can pop the three from anywhere. She's very quick defensively, and she might be one of the best third options in the conference, very likely is. And I think it's sometimes underrated because of Ziegler and Brugler down low. And what makes St. Joe's dangerous is if Smith is having a bad game from three, they can just score down low, that's fine. But they're lethal when she's also hitting from three, because then you're pressuring on Smith out up top. It leaves space down low for Brugler and Ziegler to go to work. A couple other things about St. Joe's. One, their postseason the last couple of years. Last year, they were the sixth seed. They beat 11th ranked Davidson, but lost to number three, St. Louis, by 15. And it felt like last year they probably could have upset St. Louis. I was one of those people who expected that to happen, and it just didn't happen at all. In part because 2 years ago, they won two games. They, as the seventh seed, they beat number 10 Duquesne, then they beat number two Rhode Island before losing the semifinals to UMass. So St. Joe's and this core of players has experience in the A-10 tournament. That I think is huge. And it feels like at some point this team has to get over the hump in the tournament. Is this the year? It very well could be. If it's not this year, they have more time, but this seems like a very good year to do it. However, who's their possible quarterfinal matchup among three options? It's Rhode Island. And it'll be a power matchup down low because Rhode Island has Maya Torre and Tennen Magasa down low. If you want to try to neutralize Ziegler and Brugler, Magasa and Torre are two of the best players in the conference to do that. So that could present a challenge for St. Joe's, and that's where Mackenzie Smith, Chloe Welch, Julia Nystrom become even more important because if there's not a lot hot happening down low successfully, okay, then your guards really have to step up and elevate their play. But Ziegler and Brugler have the ability to score and control a game even if they're facing two excellent players down in the post. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens. They're a little further away from home than they were the past 2 years for the tournament. Wilmington, Delaware was close. The players would come even when they were eliminated. They'd just drive over a couple days later, but they can't really do that now in Richmond. Will that make a difference? Possibly. I'm not really sure, but it'll be very curious to see. And the Hawk, it has a chance to keep flapping for a while. They got to win three games here in the A-10 tournament to win the A-10 championship, and we'll see what happens from there.
Thank you, Jacob. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, St. Joe's, it was in their backyard as it was for LaSalle. I'm kind of curious how it's going to compare with VCU and Richmond with the tournament now being in their backyard this year after the last several years. The tournament was obviously in Wilmington, Delaware, which gives us a good segue over to Kaylee for VCU. She's going to take us to first. Kind of the surprise is the two seed. VCU was kind of hanging in the 3-4 spot. Five even for a good portion of the season. And then just the way the tiebreakers broke the last week of the season, partially thanks to Fordham beating St. Joe's the last week, VCU jumped up into the second spot, especially beating George Mason certainly helped their cause. So the Rams, after a disappointing season a year ago, are now in second place. Kaylee, tell me about VCU.
So, as you've already gave me a very good segue, thank you, Daniel. VCU is not going to be, with how the metrics were working out, was not going to be in a two seed. It was more looking like it was going to be anywhere from a three to five seed. But with big wins over Mason in the last week, as well as Rhode Island, that really did help them out. But as well as St. Joe's losing to Fordham, also in that final week of regular season play, vastly greatly helped out this Rams team. They finished out their season at 26-4, 15-3 in conference play. Some big losses that they did have were to Richmond twice in the season, and they lost to Mason once out at Mason. So honestly, they basically do have a chance to really go through the entire bracket with and go unscathed, but you never really know what can happen in A10 tournament style. But they did have a lot of good wins. They had a big win over Duke, Davidson when they were receiving votes to start off conference play, as well as getting wins over Duquesne, St. Joe's, Rhode Island, and a win over Mason to split that series this season. But there's a lot of players that you got to watch on this team for VCU. Sarah Tibiasu, who was named on our A10 Talk awards, she averages 15.6 points per game, 3.1 rebounds per game, 2.9 assists per game, and 2 steals per game. So she's definitely VCU's core player, as she wasn't really a big core player last year. Tamaya Lewis Utsi averages 13.1 points per game, as well as 5.1 rebounds per game. So really having that post presence with rebounding as well as being able to score in that post, that's really helpful for this Rams team. Mariana Osare also has been a huge help as she brings in 10.3 points per game and 3.1 rebounds. But this entire VCU team can really step up at any point, especially having seen some of their other players step up, especially like Grace Hudson stepped up against UMass late earlier this season. Samantha Robinson is always willing to step up and score when it's needed, as well as Mikkel Parham and Jennifer Eze. This VCU team can really, really figure out ways to score, even if it isn't coming from Tibiasu, Lewis Utsi, or Asare. But here's some important team stats that I feel may be helpful for just realizing how VCU has gotten this good from last year. They've been managing to hold opponents to 52 points per game, and that's the first in conference. While they only average 63.4 points per game, which is 10th in conference, their margin of scoring is 11.4 points per game, which puts them up there fourth in conference, behind only George Mason, Richmond, St. Joe's. So with being behind basically the other teams in the top four is really not bad for looking at the scoring margin. But honestly, these Richmond, Virginia teams really came out this season to show what they are really made of, as we're going to kind of go cross town in Richmond to talk about our regular season champs for the first time ever in program history, the Richmond Spiders. They finished off their season 26-5, 16-2 in conference play, with only losing to Duquesne and Mason, which are in their side of the bracket. So basically, Richmond could be facing either Duquesne or Mason, whoever comes out of that 4-5 game with the win, which is going to be a huge game, as both Mason and Duquesne have beaten Richmond prior in the season. But Richmond has also stacked up a whole bunch of key wins over some of the other top six teams in the conference. They swept VCU, as I mentioned prior, beat St. Joe's, they beat Rhode Island twice. They beat Davidson, and they also beat Duquesne and split that series with them. But they got a lot of players to watch as they really do spread out that scoring. Maggie Dugan leads the team with 15.5 points per game, 5.6 rebounds per game, 2.4 assists per game, and 1.1 blocks per game. Grace Towson averages 13.3 points per game, 4.9 rebounds per game, 4.9 assists per game. Rachel Ahlstrom coming off the bench has been really, really helpful for the Spiders this year, especially after she received a vote in our A10 Talk All A10 Conference Awards. She averages 11.9 points a game and 4.6 rebounds per game. And you can't forget about Addie Budnick, who averages 11.2 points per game, 4.2 rebounds per game, 2.5 assists per game, and 2.5 blocks per game. So those four really can bring in your scoring for the Spiders team. But you can't forget about Siobhan Ryan as well as Katie Hill, who are also big players in their starting lineup that really helps out. But Rachel Ahlstrom really does bring it in off the bench, and she really has provided so much for this Spiders team this season in so many different ways, as well as basically making career high after career high in several points in this season. Just some important team stats to look at is opponents tend to average around 61 points per game, which is seventh in conference. They're that leading person in conference, averaging 73.6 points per game. And then they're only second in conference in margin and scoring with 12.6 points per game, as the only team that's ahead of them in the margin is George Mason. So this Spiders team really can bring it in March. And while they've been able to show that they are one of the strongest teams, as they've been able to keep this core group around for a long time, and I could really see this team making a big run in March. Even if they don't make it to the NCAA tournament, they are guaranteed an automatic spot in the WBIT, which, as we've mentioned, is the replacement of the WNIT, which is right below that NCAA tournament. So this team will also be seeing postseason play no matter what outcome they do have in this A10 tournament.
Awesome. Thank you, Kaylee. Two awesome breakdowns there. VCU as a team getting national attention for being the number two defense in the country, and Richmond, a team getting votes this week in the AP Top 25. So certainly two teams that are getting some traction. I think honestly all six of these teams have a case for themselves to make it to the WBIT. I know it's just a 32-team field, and obviously there's a reasonable chance one of them will end up in the NCAA tournament. Certainly we hope that Richmond, I think, has the best chance to get an at-large bid to the NCAA tournament should they come up short. I think realistically they probably have to make it to Sunday to have a good shot. But they've been in as the automatic qualifier in so many of these projections that we've seen recently. Just by virtue of winning the conference, winning the regular season, it's kind of hard to get a feel for, where they stand from a bubble perspective. I know George Mason was on the bubble as recently as this past week prior to the loss to VCU, and St. Joe's has hung around it as well. So with that, I want to kind of move into the next stage here. We're going to have some roundtable discussions. But before we do, I want to take a kind of a sidebar here and kind of address the elephant in the room about Davidson. And I know Jacob has followed them pretty closely this season. So I'll give this over to Jacob here in just a second to comment on Davidson. But for those who do not know, so Davidson has stepped out of the A10 tournament this season and canceled the duration of their season. They've, I think, forfeited the last three games of the regular season. And basically, the situation is they just don't have enough healthy players to field a team. It's not COVID, unlike in years past. It is just good old-fashioned injuries, which truly so heartbreaking for a team that started the non-conference 12-1, wins over Wake Forest and Duke, and nearly beat North Carolina as well. Really heartbreaking to see how this season went. Jacob, I'm curious what your thoughts are on Davidson.
My thoughts are, first of all, it's been saddening to watch because, first of all, you feel for the people. I mean, they're our age, a little younger, like 18 to 21, 22 year olds. And when you have, for those who have severe knee injuries like that, it doesn't just impact your basketball. That's something that is tough to deal with physically and mentally for many, many months. And so from that aspect as well, it's sad, but I've been so impressed with the character of this Davidson team. The decision to cancel the rest of the season, that didn't come out of the blue. I think we had a hint when those games were forfeited earlier in February before they were able to return for the George Washington game with enough healthy players. But this Davidson team has. They've always been so fun this season, and that's what excited me about them, is they had so much joy showing up to the arena, playing games. They seemed so happy to be there, and it was showing in their play as well, the way they were skyrocketing in terms of wins and losses. But it's hard enough for a team when you see one player go down with an injury that's season ending, and then two happen in the same game. That game at George Mason in January was brutal, to say the least. Not only was it was supposed to be a big game for top of the standings, et cetera, and it still was in terms of standing implications, but poor Davidson had two players go down with season-ending injuries, not to mention the fact they darn near ran out of players in that game and were losing by 20. It was a helpless feeling to watch and a helpless feeling for them because there's only so much you can do. But they still competed. They still showed up the next day, or the next game, and they played anyway, and they battled, and they won their next game. They only lost by 5 to Richmond. They only lost by 7 to Duquesne. Trying to do this without your best players on the court, not to mention your leaders as well sitting over there, the character that this team showed made me even more in awe of them, because especially as more players went down, once Matty Plank went down in the George Washington game on Wednesday in the second to last regular season scheduled game, there you kind of had a feeling that might be it, and there they are fighting anyway. They've got six healthy scholarship players, three of them are freshmen, and they're trying to figure out a way to do this without so many important pieces. And they were fighting, scratching, clawing, and they were right there to the very end where they fell just short. And that was, they were doing that after they had to suffer the emotional toll of seeing another teammate go down. So immense credit to them, not just for playing and the way they are as players, but for the way they are as people in terms of battling through what they have. And huge credit goes to head coach Gale Foulkes and the whole coaching staff as well, because that's an even more helpless feeling where you're seeing all your players go down. You're supposed to have the answers, but frankly, you don't even have the people. How are you supposed to come up with the answers? And I'm really impressed by the program, the coaches, the players. And that was a very long-winded way to say their character has been immense. We are wishing them nothing but the best in terms of their road to recovery for those who are injured physically, mentally, emotionally. And they brought so much joy to the Davidson women's basketball program. Their start was historic. You mentioned it, Daniel. This is a great season for Davidson on the court that ended terribly through the last month and a half, 2 months. But they were a lot of fun when they were out there, even when they were shorthanded. They were still having fun. Still having a great time, still doing it for the player next to them. So they really were quite a joy to watch and quite a joy to follow.
No, absolutely. I mean, you mentioned the Mason game, and I'll tell you, I was at that game. It was one of the weirder games I've been a part of, because for George Mason, that was probably to the that point in the season their biggest win of the year. But the feeling afterwards, even from like the Mason coaching staff and like the press conferences, like you don't have the same kind of normal celebrating that you would feel. Like they almost were like a little subdued, just because like, okay, you lose one player in a game, dang, you know, that sucks. It happens sometimes. To lose two players like that, to they were essentially non-contact knee injuries or just the types of things that no one ever wants to see happen. So I think you described it perfectly, Jacob.
And I also want to give a quick shout out to the two players who they brought onto their roster who weren't a part of the team initially. Credit to them for jumping in and trying their best. Credit to the three freshmen, Eliza Burke, Chloe Oliver, and Katie Donovan, who barely got any minutes in the first half of the season, now all of a sudden are starting or playing 20, 30 minutes. And so for them to take on such elevated roles, massively impressive as well. It was a team cohesion to finish the regular season as best they could, which is what they did. But it wasn't, credit goes to everyone because everyone had to step up, even those who somehow managed to play the whole season. It was really something impressive.
Absolutely. So we're going to move now into our next segment here. We're going to do some roundtable discussion items here. We're going to start. We've given you now the rundown of the top six. We gave you kind of the story behind Davidson. We're now going to move on to kind of the rest of the field. So, Zach Austin, I want to start with you because I know that we've not had you speak in a second. So I'd love to have you back in here. And I know you probably are going to have an inkling of who I think you're going to go with this direction for this question, but kind of for the group, but we'll start with Zach. Who do you think from Thursday has a chance to win the A10 tournament?
I mean, we've really alluded to this all episode long, but the elephant in the room, the obvious answer is Rhode Island. I think a large part of that is who they match up against. They're in the part of the bracket where, you know, their first game on Thursday, they're either playing Dayton, who they just walked into UD Arena, get their first ever win and storm, you know, blow the doors off of them from the jump. Or you have a St. Bonaventure team who Rhode Island didn't play great against, but that was way back in early January, and that team has been really, you know, not that impressive all year long. They have a small roster. They're rebuilding. And if you win, you play St. Joe's. And I mentioned this earlier when I was filling out my bracket. It's hard to beat the same team three times in one season. And for the most part, St. Joe's has, you know, held control in both those games earlier this year. But the common thread, and this is something that, maybe I should have mentioned earlier, in a lot of these games this year, a lot of Rhode Island losses, for as poorly as they might play in the first half, first three quarters, they have an inkling of sneaking back and really putting it all together in the fourth quarter. They were down double figures in both St. Joseph's games and cut it to one score. The second meeting at Philly, they cut it to one. So they have to be able to recreate that and maybe be more consistent earlier in games. But they are capable of beating a St. Joseph's team. And for the third matchup, it's hard to beat the same team three times. With that being said, Duquesne obviously is another great candidate, and they are a seed above Rhode Island. They have George Mason, who, yeah, they lost to lost to the Patriots by 30, but at the same time, they scored 75 points. That was a ridiculous output from George Mason. Are they able to do that again? Not so sure, but I think you obviously have to look at those two teams. And I think, especially with Rhode Island in that matchup, I think that's a really intriguing one to look at should Rhode Island advance to Friday.
Yeah, I mean, Zach hit it right on the nail with both Duquesne and Rhode Island. I feel like Rhode Island has the easier path to make it that far, as Duquesne, as Zach Weiss mentioned earlier, Duquesne does have a little bit of a tougher path with both UMass and LaSalle for their play-in game. LaSalle will slow things down, while UMass could speed things up, could slow the tempo down. It just really depends on who their opponent is, if they want to play slow or if they want to play fast. So I feel Rhode Island has a better chance here to make it farther into this, just because of who they have in their bracket, as they could get either St. Bonaventure or Dayton. But I have a funny feeling, I'm not going to go out there and all the way say it, is going to be Dayton. But honestly, I feel like it's either going to be your five or your six seed, as we've already covered them both very well in this podcast so far today.
I actually think the seven seed has a really good chance, meaning St. Louis. Maybe that's because I've been traumatized from last year's St. Louis team, but the players, for the most part, are still the same. Brooklyn Gray's a newcomer to the team. She's been excellent. Most of the new pieces that St. Louis has got have been very good this season. It seems like it's been a matter of where the individual pieces haven't added up to the best that the team as a whole can be. Well, that can kind of work for last year's St. Louis team as well. They were below 500 entering the A-10 tournament and then made a run. St. Louis plays George Washington first at 5 p.m. on Thursday. We mentioned this earlier a little bit. Because of the odd tournament format switching due to Davidson's canceling, GW was kind of a first-round team. And so I think St. Louis can take care of them. I don't think that game is going to be a blowout. I don't think St. Louis right now is running all cylinders to blow teams out, albeit GW hasn't looked their finest this year. But St. Louis, they've got some really talented players who have won before. I'm not saying they're going to win the whole thing, but I think they can beat GW. And then I think in the following round, they would play VCU. And Kaylee mentioned this earlier. VCU doesn't score the basketball very much, which is defense wins championships is the saying. St. Louis can play defense pretty well as also. So honestly, that might be a race to 55 points if St. Louis were to play VCU. But St. Louis, I think, could win that game. VCU is not going to blow them out by 30 either, because that's not what VCU does. So you keep that in a close game. St. Louis has postseason experience, VCU less so. Don't be surprised if St. Louis is somehow hung around and there they are on Saturday in the semifinals.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, SLU is an interesting choice. I had someone in my Twitter mentions this morning, and I didn't even realize this. Apparently, St. Louis entered the tournament last year 14-17 as an overall record, and they enter once again this year 14-17. I think a little bit different of a season, a little different trajectory last season. They kind of were getting hot at the right time. I'm not quite sure that's where they're at this year, at least not to the same degree that they were last season.
They also, by the way, sorry, they need to give Julia Martinez more minutes. She's one of the best players in the conference all around. Please put her on the floor for the good of A-10 women's basketball so we can watch one of the best players go to work. She's so much fun to watch, and she hasn't necessarily gotten all the playing time. So let's see it, Coach. Let's see
a
lot of Julia Martinez.
She just had a triple-double. I mean, I know it was against Knox College. Like, yeah, it's Knox College. It's non-D1. But, like, for real, like, you got to put her on the floor. I don't understand. Yes. There's a lot of questions with that.
Right. Just one more team I just thought of. Jacob, you just made it randomly pop in my head. I don't know if I was just thinking about the Hawks and I'll never die, but the Fordham Rams, they could be very sneaky in this. They did go have a big win streak in the end of conference play, minus losing to LaSalle in their final game of the season. But I feel like this Fordham Rams team could be surprising in this tournament. Granted, they're the 9 seed. But that's due to some tiebreakers that we had and everything. But I feel like Fordham could really give Richmond a run for its money. It's just another one I just thought of off the top of my head, not trying to butt in on anyone thinking about anything. But Fordham and Loyola, honestly, could really be very sneaky on this.
Yeah, Kaylee, I completely agree with you. And I remember watching when Fordham went to Richmond and played that game. That game was close at halftime. And I think that it was either a one-score game. They may have even led at one point early in the third quarter. They're capable of going into places. They also played Rhode Island close at the Ryan Center back in January as well. This is a team that can really give these top seeds a run for their money. You look at their top two, Taylor Donaldson, who, of course, is likely going to be a first-team all-conference selection, if not very close to it. And then Amy Hayford, who's had a really solid season as well. You look at those top two, they have, I think Fordham's exceeded expectations this year, and they're capable of winning multiple games this week.
It's funny. I didn't intend for the segment to turn into breaking everybody down, but honestly, I have to go with Loyola Chicago because that's who I had written down here. So I guess we're just going to say each of these teams have a chance to move. But you know what? That's what's great about March, because anything can happen. And you can look, there's always a reason why any of these teams are, outside the top four or outside the top four. You can look at Duquesne. They lost to Mason by 30. They couldn't beat St. Joe's. There's always reasons for any of these teams why they're in the position they're in that is, not a top four seed. But that doesn't mean that they're not capable of pulling off a win. And that's a great thing about March. I mean, we saw this over and over every single year. You don't have to beat a team in a best of seven series. You just have to have one game where everything can, go your way. Or not even everything, but that's what's so great about March. And honestly, before their game at GW, I was really, really, really high on this Loyola team. And I still am. I'm very undecided about how I feel about GW right now, just because I'm really truly not sure that they deserve to not be playing on Wednesday, just based off their body of work this season. But I do at the same time think they could beat SLU because it feels like the type of crazy thing that happens in March. And similarly, I mean, Loyola is a team that last year won one game in conference play. It was their conference opener against SLU, I believe. And then they did not win a game the rest of the season. This year's Loyola team could not be more different. They have a lot of depth and just skill at each position that they have not had, certainly not since we've seen them in the A-10. Obviously, that's a small sample size. But Loyola is also a team. Honestly, the winner of this Loyola Fordham game very well could give Richmond a fight. I know that we've been talking about the headliners for Friday: Duquesne, George Mason. Should we get that matchup? Rhode Island, St. Joe's. Should we get that matchup? Don't overlook whoever Richmond's going to end up playing. The Spiders could get bounced in one game and out. So there's a lot of really interesting things that could be happening on Friday. And speaking of Friday, I want to kind of move us on to the next question here. I know we touched on this a little bit, but in a similar vein, who do we think from Wednesday could potentially get themselves into Friday? We're not talking about, winning the whole conference tournament here, but who do we think is getting hot at the right time of the bottom of the A-10?
Can I just say this one is maybe a little wonky. I know this, especially because, well, they're a 13 seed, and well, next season's their final season here in the A10, if you listen to our previous episode, but we're not talking about that right now. UMass could be getting hot at the right time. UMass, yes, they lost to LaSalle twice, but both in close game fashions. That second game just came down to really, really like reffing really, really small call that could have put it into overtime, could have kept it like kept ga the game going, but it ultimately didn't, and it ended up with, I believe it was Steph Kalaja fouling out. But this UMass team can't be overlooked by Lily Talalay and Chinenye Odenigbo. Both of those two freshmen power freshman centers really have grown so much, especially as this UMass team, just like Davidson, not as bad as Davidson, has been dealt with the injury bug a lot this season. We saw Bree Bellamy go down with a non-contact what I want to say is knee injury back in against Rhode Island at UMass. Zach was there and witnessed it. Honestly, I feel like UMass, really, while they haven't had the best of seasons, they just won their second conference game against the Bonnies. And, well, they shook off a 15-game losing streak at the right time. And, well, they may break that reputation as well, but you never know. And, yes, I am starting to get punny with my Taylor Swift stuff, as it was Eras Night when they did win that. So, honestly, a home team finally won on Eras Night in the A-10, so that's pretty cool as well. But, honestly, I feel like UMass could be very, very sneaky on this. And you guys can disagree with me, but I feel like UMass could, given that this was supposed to be our second-to-last 15-seed bracket. Team bracket next year will be our final 15 team bracket, as UMass will be leaving to go to the Mid-American Conference for the season after that. But
yeah, have fun in the MAC, Kaylee.
Well, I will just disclose this now. I will still be staying on for A10 Talk Women's Basketball, as Daniel knows I've been working very closely with them. And well, I feel like Daniel would miss me greatly if I did leave. Especially as I've helped out with the graphics a lot. As you'll see, we have some graphics posted with this podcast on Twitter, with our bracket choices from everyone that was on the podcast tonight. So definitely check those out with all of our predictions going into the tournament.
Congratulations, Kaylee, for staying. We're happy to have you. And I think, you know, I think you have a great point with UMass, with the momentum. And the matchup in that first round against LaSalle, I think it's so interesting, because you look at the two matchups that they had going earlier this year. They were both close, and UMass had a very good chance to win both of them. But then you look at this LaSalle team, and you know, they can really shoot the lights out at times, but they've really struggled this year. You look at them, they need to win, because you look at their head coach, Mountain McGavelry. He's pretty much fighting for his job right now, I think. And, you know, you've beaten UMass twice. Again, it is hard to beat the same team three times. This is a UMass team who's a bit shorthanded and has really struggled this year as well. You can win that game and some other games this year. Again, the Fordham game, we just talked about the Fordham Rams a little bit ago. They've played surprisingly well at times. So you never know. They could catch some lightning in a bottle and advance a couple rounds.
And I guess the question is, in March, you always want to be hot. Does one game winning streak count as hot? For UMass, it might. For LaSalle, it might, because they're each coming in having won one game in a row. And while I make fun of a little bit, I do think LaSalle also has a chance because one, St. Bonaventure doesn't seem to be entirely healthy. Danny Haskell wasn't dressed for the regular season finale against UMass. And while Isabella Middleton has been a very good player for St. Bonaventure, can she be a one-person show and lead them to a victory against Dayton? I think doubtful. Dayton hasn't impressed me wildly either in terms of their hopes of winning the following day on Thursday. But I think LaSalle, they just dropped, 93 points on Fordham on Saturday? You got to be feeling good after that. And it was on the road. That's something. You can take that and run with it. And LaSalle has played UMass both times this year, UMass has choked in the second half, whether it's the third quarter or the fourth quarter. And it's been very ugly, but also kudos to LaSalle. They have figured out how to speed UMass up, how to force the Minutewomen to collapse down the stretch. If you've done that twice, you know it's in both teams' heads. So LaSalle has to make sure they don't get complacent. But UMass, they might, if they're up in the third quarter, the Minutewomen might get, I don't want to use the word scared, but a little tepid that LaSalle can come back again and do it for a third time. So I'll go with the Explorers as the team to make the most amount of noise. They can shoot well, like we mentioned. If their offense clicks like it was against Fordham on Saturday, maybe they can surprise Duquesne in the following round. You never really know, because Duquesne's not super defensively stout like a VCU per se.
Well, here's the thing, though, I'm going to kind of just mention. LaSalle is not known to score very well in two back-to-back games. So this is where UMass could be getting the advantage of this. So, yes, I am kind of waving the UMass flag here. I deserve to be waving the UMass flag because, well, it's a love story between me and UMass and UMass women's basketball. Yes, I am still getting funny. I see that smile, Daniel, but honestly, this team is saying you belong with me for this game on Thursday. So Oh, I definitely have broke Daniel now because I can just see Daniel is laughing hysterically.
I don't think I can follow that up. I think we I have nothing to follow that up, man. I think we're just gonna have to move on to our next segment here for our tournament predictions. We're gonna go around the horn here. I think we're just gonna each give kind of what our quarterfinals look like, our semifinals, and then our championship. If you have any other things, kind of prior to that, feel free to shout it out as you're going through your stuff. But I'll kick things off here. So my quarterfinals is Richmond, Loyola, Mason Duquesne, VCU GW, and Rhodey St. Joe's. I touched on this earlier. GW over SLU just because it feels like this kind of stupid thing that could happen in March. I get the vibe that this is going to be, just based off the season we've had, a tournament with a lot of upsets. I think the last couple of years we saw a fair amount of chalk. Have a gut feeling this is going to be a tournament that kind of turns things upside down. And certainly I'm hoping that falls in Mason's favor, as completely objectively speaking. But moving on, my semifinals, I do have both Mason and Richmond advancing into the semis, as well as VCU. But my, I don't know if you want to call it an upset other than seeding line here, but I think we all have our eye on this game. I have Rhodey taking down St. Joe's. I just like the way the Rams are playing. I feel like they're just kind of due to put it together. I know March has been kind of Rhode Island's bugaboo over the last couple of years. They've not been able to put all those pieces together, but I just feel like Rhode Island's gonna at least get to the semis. I just feel like there's too much talent on that team not to. My championship game, I have Mason taking on VCU. So I have Mason getting by Richmond. I really like this Spiders team, but I really, really like this Mason team. Is this a homer pick? You damn right it is a homer pick. But I feel like Richmond's vulnerable. I feel like between Fordham, Loyola, and Mason, and frankly Duquesne for that matter too, that they have to get through to get to the championship, that's a tough draw for a one seed to get. VCU, I feel like, just has such a good defensive prowess about them. They're the number two defense in the country, as I mentioned. I just, it would break me because I would have a heart attack watching it. But a Mason VCU championship game, can I get round three? Please, without any more Mason concussions this time around. But I just, Mason VCU round three would be a fantastic conclusion to this tournament. I do have the Patriots taking down the Nets here, and making their first ever NCAA tournament berth. I'll turn it over to whoever wants to go next, but that's what I've got going on here.
I will do the honors of going next. And Daniel, I think I have a very similar bracket to yours, and especially in regards to who that upset might be Friday going into Saturday, which is Rhode Island over St. Joe's. That game gives me quite a bit of PTSD from the last few years. My first in-person tournament game I covered was that quarterfinals game 2 years ago, which left everybody up in Kingston heartbroken. But I think you got to get over the hump eventually. You already lost to St. Joe's twice this year. I think they do it here in Enrico. VCU, I think, gets to the semis as well. I don't see, if St. Louis or George Washington, whoever comes out of that game, I just don't see them having enough in them to get past VCU. George Mason and Duquesne, again, I think it's going to be a fun one and it might be another high scoring game, but George Mason, I do think, is the better team. Richmond comes out of Friday as well. It will be a tough game. But yeah, I think they're capable. If they have the experience, they have the seniors, the fifth year players, to get it done in March. Rhode Island and VCU, I hate to say this, but I think the VCU Rams take down Rhode Island again. And I say that because in my mind, Rhode Island has to play perfect to take on VCU and to win. And again, anything's possible. This is far from a lock. Rhode Island has the talent to do it, but I'm not sure they can get that far 3 games in a row. They haven't done that often this year. I'd be happy to be proven wrong, but I think VCU in a very friendly territory in this tournament right down the road gets to the finals. And kind of along the same lines, I see Richmond getting there as well. And I'm going to go along this with the same reason as I did before. I think Richmond has the experience over Mason that they don't quite have yet. They have the talent, but they don't have the experience in March. I think Richmond takes that step. They go to the finals. It's a hometown finals, Richmond VCU. And as the old saying goes, defense wins championships. VCU, the second best defense in the country. We've seen Richmond falter, and not often this year, but a few times. And when they do, they find themselves in trouble. I think VCU has the answers to get it done. They avoid losing all three to Richmond, and they win the championship.
So you two were talking a lot about upsets. I was disappointed when I was filling out my bracket because I wasn't picking many upsets. It was very much to chalk it. I don't like that. There were a couple of times where I was like, well, should I go the other way? That way it makes my bracket more exciting, but I felt like that wasn't the proper way to go about it. For me, I'm not buying the Rhode Island St. Joseph's hype in terms of the 3-6 upset if that were to happen in the quarterfinals. I think St. Joseph's is going to want this. I'm not saying Rhode Island isn't, but St. Joe's has the disappointment of the last 2 seasons in the A-10 tournament, particularly 2 years ago. Again, it feels like their moment is coming if it's not already here. I don't have that same emotional feeling for Rhode Island, in part because their roster is slightly different, albeit not as different as past years. So I do think St. Joe's can make it past Rhode Island in the quarterfinals and will. I have Richmond taking on Loyola Chicago in the quarterfinals at the top of the bracket. I think Richmond will win that. Not much explanation there. My big upset, per se, is fifth-ranked Duquesne over George Mason. A little surprising. I'm trying to remember what my thought process was when I chose that, but I think it was something along the lines of Zach Weiss talked about it earlier. Duquesne has done well when they've had slightly longer breaks and they've kind of gotten an opportunity to recompose themselves. They've looked like a decent team. I'm sorry, a different team the last few weeks than they did earlier in the season. It felt like they were on the verge of breaking, but when they reached that breaking point, now they found a way to come together and get better. So I think they're going to defeat George Mason. Also, George Mason is a little short-handed injury-wise. I'm worried about that as well for the Patriots. I think the timing and the stars just align a little better for the Dukes. And I've got VCU defeating St. Louis in the quarterfinals. So my semifinals, number one, Richmond versus fifth ranked Duquesne. And I've got Richmond winning that. I just don't think Duquesne's good enough to upset Richmond. They have a lot of talent, but a lot of things would have to go right. And Richmond has looked so solid all year long. So I've got the Spiders moving to the finals. In the other semifinals now, I have number two, VCU against number three, St. Joseph's. I'm riding the Hawk train. I think St. Joe's gets the upset there, if you will. VCU, I think their lack of ability to score a ton is going to hurt. Yes, the saying is defense wins championships, but I feel like it applies a little less in basketball. It really is important to have a go-to like way to get offense. St. Joe's takes a lot of high percentage shots with Brugler and Ziegler, so I think they'll upset VCU. Now, I just want to make a quick point. It's been three straight tournaments that it has not been the top four seeds in the semifinals, meaning we've had some sort of change of room. My current bracket here with 1, 5, 2, and 3 also changes that as well. But for the finals, I've got for the third year in a row a number one against the number three, Richmond against St. Joe's in the finals. And I say for the third year in a row, the three seed will upset the one seed in the championship. Congratulations, St. Joe's. The Hawks will never die. Let's pin this and we'll come back to it on Sunday evening.
Well, before I read up my bracket, just because Zach Weiss had to hop off, I'm going to quickly read out his bracket and then I'll go to mine. But may I just point out, thus far we've had three different predicted champions from three different people. We're about to make it four different champions predicted by four different people. So starting in the quarterfinals, Zach has Richmond versus Fordham. And sees Richmond going and beating Fordham. He also has Duquesne over Mason, just because I think he felt that it was going to be better for Duquesne with getting a little more momentum, just having a bit more of a break. He also had VCU over St. Louis, and then he also had St. Joe's over Rhode Island. Sorry, Zach. I guess the other Zach wants St. Joe's to do a clean sweep of Rhodey this year. But then going into the semis, Zach has Richmond over Duquesne. He kind of is going a little bit chalk here, but honestly, I don't blame him because Daniel and I can tell you that's kind of how we went last year, and we were almost spot on. And then he also has VC, he has St. Joe's over VCU, so going back to a 1-3 matchup just like Jacob had. But instead of having St. Joe's beating Richmond, Zach has Richmond beating St. Joe. So I'll be very intrigued to see how Zach Weiss's bracket stands, but it's on to my bracket, and well, I'm just gonna break it to you right now. Five different champions from five different people. No one has the same champion this year. And last year it was pretty darn like chalk similar, where it was like UMass all the way. It was just because everyone felt very comfortable with UMass between me, Daniel, and Sam Basil. But for me to break down my bracket now, I just finalized it now. Please note this at 4:59 p.m. on Monday, March 4th. In the quarterfinals, I have Richmond versus Fordham, with Richmond beating Fordham. I have Mason beating Duquesne. I have VCU versus St. Louis, and VCU is beating St. Louis. Sorry, Daniel and GW. But then here's where I got a little different from the group. I believe that Rhode Island can beat St. Joe's. So I have Rhode Island over St. Joe's. Now, going into my semifinal matchup, I have Mason Richmond. I went Mason over Richmond, as I feel Mason really gave Richmond some problems. And while Daniel was there to witness it live, an overtime game that I thought Daniel was gonna freak out on. I have Mason winning that one for round two. And then I have VCU Rhode Island. Here's where I get a little less chalky than the rest of you guys. I have Rhode Island over VCU because I have faith in this Rhode Island team. On the women's side, I love Rhode Island women's basketball. I love Tammy Reese. She's awesome. One of the best coaches in the A-10, I would say. But I'm sorry, Vanessa Bitt, Blair Lewis, and Allison Guth really both have a good chance for Coach of the Year. But Tammy Reese is one of the best coaches I've seen in this A-10. So in my championship game, I have Rhode Island and I have Mason. Well, I told you there's five different champions from five different people. Probably can guess who it is. It's Rhode Island. I really have faith in this Rhode Island team, not just because they're the closest team to me, just because I have faith that this Rhode Island team can start to get hot and really build up momentum and can win four games. Even though that is being a little bit risky, I do have faith in this. And honestly, it could be worse. And yes, I know I'm doing a hot take right now before we get to our hot take segment, but I do believe that Rhode Island could pull this off and finally win a conference tournament championship.
Kaylee, if anyone could predict a non-top four seed, it would be you. Because do you know the last time that we had a non-top four seed win the A-10 championship and who they played in that championship game?
I do not.
It was when five seed VCU, Jacobs
Oh,
is signing it, beat
VCU's
seven seed UMass in 2021.
back
And the time before that was 2018, was the previous time that a non-top four seed won the A-10 championship, when GW as a five seed took out St. Joe's, who was a six seed in the A-10 championship. That was a year that only one of the top four seeds advanced to the semifinals. GW was the five seed, St. Joe's was a six, and SLU was a seven that all advanced. Dayton was the only one that advanced of the top four. So if anyone would know, Kaylee, you might just have some spidey senses from 2021 going. That'll bring us into our final segment of the night. We'll do some hot takes and final closing thoughts. Since I've already brought it up, I was going to bring this up anyway. My hot take is that when George Mason's good, things get really funky. The last and only other time since joining the A-10 that George Mason was a top 14, or frankly was a top seven seed, I believe, was 2018, officially known to Mason Nation as the Natalie Butler season, the UConn transfer. George Mason was a four seed that season, but because of that was the if folks remember, that was the weird old format where only the top two teams in the conference got a bye to the quarterfinals. Everybody else opened with an opening round game where seeds 3 through 8 had a home game against the bottom half. It was weird. It was really freaking weird. At any rate, George Mason didn't get it, was not the beneficiary of a double bye that season. And they fell short to GW in the quarterfinals that year, en route to GW's most recent A-10 tournament championship. But as I mentioned, that was the year that everything went haywire. We had only one of the top four seeds advance. And when George Mason is good, things get weird. So my hot take is things are going to get weird. Loyola is going to make it to the semifinal. Something weird or stupid is going to happen. And frankly, I'm very excited to see it all happen live. I know I'm going to be there. I know Zach Austin is going to be there with Rhode Island. I know Zach Weiss is going to be there as well with the Atlantic 10. The Atlantic10.com, he's going to be doing recaps for them. I'm very excited for how this week's going to go. I'm going down Thursday morning. I'll be there through Sunday night. If you see me or any of the other folks of us, holler at us. You know, we'd love to say hey. That's my closing thought. I'll pass it off to the group for hot takes and closing thoughts.
This is less of a hot take, except for the fact, if you were to look back in November at the beginning of the season and think about where you might power rank the teams, the way the final regular season standings came out is very unlike what we predicted. Looking back to our week one rankings, we had Rhode Island 1, we had St. Louis 2. Last I checked, they're now 6 and 7 in the regular season standings. And we had Richmond down in the 5 to 6 area per se. We had VCU at 9th, Mason at 6. My point being, and we Loyola at 14th, but my point being that this year has surprised us in a lot of ways. And that's been really great, where there wasn't a huge, huge favorite coming into the year like UMass or Rhode Island with the past couple of years. But my take is we've had a lot of surprises on us throughout the regular season. Don't be surprised if those we had thought highly of at the beginning of the season reappear in the semifinals, in the finals. I'm looking at you, Rhodey. I'm looking at you, St. Louis. Maybe they'll prove us right at the very end, but it's been a really fun year. There's been a lot of parity, a lot of changing in the one slots, a lot of stuff we could not have seen happening, both good and bad. So, I mean, this is going to be great. I can't wait for this weekend, Henrico.
Yeah, talk about surprises, Jacob. And I'm going to go along with that theme, but I'm going to deviate from it a little bit. Because instead of maybe the teams we expected to be good that had worse years than we expected kind of coming back, if I'm going to deviate from my bracket and say hot take for this tournament, none of the teams you mentioned are going to make it to the semifinals or in half the bracket. I'm talking about the top half with Richmond and George Mason. My hot take of the tournament is both those teams miss out. Fordham will advance and play Duquesne. If I have to deviate from my bracket, that is my hot take.
I like it. I like it.
Thank you for giving a moment, Jacob, there for my brain to kind of absorb that news. Because, well, Daniel knows, I am pretty much known for making the weirdest hot takes possible. I'm going to say the chalk's broken this year. We've gone chalk almost every single, the past two seasons now. And, well, I feel like the chalk's broken this year. I feel like we could be seeing a team outside of the top four really get into that semifinal and championship game and really mess around with stuff. I really feel like that chalk could be broken on not just the Richmond side of the bracket, but also on the VCU side of the bracket. And we could be seeing another one of what we saw back in 2021, where we saw VCU and UMass, who are both outside of that top four double byes, really go in there and mess around with everything. So that's where I'm saying I feel like I could see Rhode Island making it all the way for once. But if I had to pull a team from the other side of the bracket, I'm not going to go that far and say Fordham or Loyola. I'm going to say Duquesne could cause some havoc with some brackets. But other than that, I couldn't see really Fordham beating Richmond. I mean, it would be cool to see Fordham beat Richmond, but I just don't know if I can full on say that. But I could see a Duquesne Rhode Island matchup possibly in the championships if you want to get hot takes for that outside of the top four. But honestly, predicting A-10 women's basketball is like trying to count how many grains of rice are in a bag. It is chaotic. You can never keep track of what's going to happen. You never know what's happening, especially come conference play. This is March. Honestly, you gotta be ready for anything. Chalk could go out the window within the first 5 minutes of Wednesday. Chalk could go out the window first 20 minutes of the first game on Thursday. So you really can't predict what's going to happen, and you can't predict what team's going to be streaky or things like that. So that's for honestly saying, well, I would go with the extreme hot take and say UMass is making it to the championship. I already know it's not happening. I know it's not happening. Okay. I would love to see that, but Evermore is not going to happen. So with that, I'll hand it back over to Danielle, unless anyone else has any more hot takes.
This has been awesome. It has been so wonderful to have, first of all, the conversations that we have in the group chat every single day, having a great team of voters for power rankings, just seeing the work, the hard work that everyone's put in here throughout this season. I'm really, really appreciative of. I know none of us are getting paid to do this. We're all volunteering our time to do this for A10 Talk, and it's really a labor of love. And it's I'm truly grateful to work with such a great group of people here. Very excited for the week ahead and excited to see how things are going to pan out. So with that, thank you again for listening to the A10 Talk podcast. Make sure you keep checking us out. Follow us wherever you get your podcasts, Spotify, Apple, wherever it may be. Make sure to keep checking us out at a10talk.com for updates on your favorite 15 teams on both the men's and women's side of college basketball. Make sure you follow us at A10 Talk on Twitter. We've got updates coming to you every single day. Every single game. I know I will be on site at Henrico, as will Zach Austin and Zach Weiss. Kaylee will be holding it down virtually. Lots of content stuff coming your way this week, so make sure you keep an eye out for that. You can find each of us on Twitter for all of our coverage we'll be doing this week, giving you the very best coverage of A10 Women's Basketball and the A10 Women's Championship. And so, for Kaylee Godek, Jacob Bunch, Zach Austin, Zach Weiss, I'm Daniel Frank. This has been the A10 Talk Podcast, and until then, we'll see you guys next time.